This is Kenneth Doust, and welcome to New World Notes, installment number 106, titled The Second Coming in American Imagination. The Second Coming of Christ, at some future date, is a key article of Christian faith. Some of us on the margins of that religion wonder why anybody seems to care. Christians believe that Jesus Christ was God incarnate. They believe that he came to earth once already, 2 millennia ago. Yet, obviously, nobody seems to be paying the slightest attention to anything he said then, during his first visit. Imagine that an anthropologist from Mars visited Earth in 2008 and spent the next year in America, living among the natives and observing their habits, customs, and rituals. Would anyone blame the extraterrestrial anthropologist if she concluded that Christianity were little more than an excuse for persecuting homosexuals, increasing military recruitment, stealing oil from Muslims, and getting together to sing 2 or 3 horribly awful songs once a week? Whether or not we believe he was God incarnate, most Americans do believe there was a real guy from Nazareth named Jesus. Americans believe that he was, at the least, a great prophet and moral exemplar. And they apparently believe that this guy's words and example have no connection with our $1 trillion War Department budget, with transferring the nation's wealth from the poor and the middle to the already obscenely rich, no connection with our refusing to heal the sick or feed the hungry, no connection with our keeping the casinos open on Sundays, with our conquering the world, no connection with our exploding and roasting alive every man, woman, and child at every wedding in Pakistan and Afghanistan. Gay marriage? Are you kidding? We're not even allowing Muslim marriage. But enough of theology. I think the Second Coming is more interesting as a metaphor or trope in the popular consciousness of our culture. In basic outline, in both popular culture and theology, the narrative goes something like this. First, there's going to be one heck of a confusing but loud big battle, the Battle of Armageddon. Helter-skelter on steroids, man. Then Christ will return and rule the world for 1,000 years of peace, progress, and prosperity. That was Eisenhower's campaign slogan in 1956, peace, progress, prosperity. Then the world ends, and that's that. As a kind of sideshow, at some point in all this, all the saved people, including the bodies of dead ones, will be swept up to heaven. The mainline Protestant church I was schlepped off to didn't make much of this oddball bit of doctrine, the rapture, but a lot of Pat Robertson types think it important. The graves will open up, and the reconstituted bodies of their occupants will ascend to heaven. Why, I can't imagine. Presumably, the souls from these corpses have been up in heaven, some for many centuries, getting along just fine without those troublesome bodies. As you may have guessed, theology doesn't come easily to me. But with or without the rapture, the Second Coming narrative has had quite a hold on the American popular imagination, particularly the return itself. The metaphor is a handy light to reveal our blindness and especially our hypocrisies, and to reveal the gap between how life should and could be, on the one hand, and the sordidness of our existence on the other. There's a classic bumper sticker that I'm going to have to censor a little for radio, but it went along the lines of, Jesus is coming, and boy is he ticked off. Let's hear Lenny Bruce's take on this very theme. Here's the scenario. It's somewhere around 1960. Christ and Moses return together. They visit a Reformed Jewish congregation in L.A., then catch a flight to New York. It's Sunday, and they wander into the grand St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City. Mass is being conducted by 2 princes of the church, the telegenic Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen and the old warmonger himself, Francis Cardinal Spellman.
West Coast, Christ and Moses will make reform shuls, reformed rabbis. So reformed, they're ashamed they're Jewish. And they got a different sound. Is it typical Reformed rabbi sound? Service, right? 12:01 Saturday night. When it should be said that the children of Israel. Ha ha, Israel. Where is Israel? Is yonder Israel? Out quench on flaming Yahrzeit candle, Israel. That is the Israel of Chabeli and David and Ruth and Cheryl Ann and Joy. Oh, Rabbi, that was a beautiful speech.
Thanks a lot. You like that, Vidal? Tough top my head.
Oh, yeah. All right, now, Sunday. Christ and Moses fly to New York. Transcontinental, $88 to Chicago, $30. All right, now let's see what they would make. They'd probably make... They say, what's playing at St. Pat's?
Good double bill, Spellman and Sheen. That's okay.
Oh, Mr. Spellman, oh, Mr. Sheen. Okay, now... Christ and Moses both possessed humility. Why? Wisdom. That's it. Anybody who is secure, there's never any hostility, because he's cool. Yeah. Anyone who is above you, even. They know what he said. So they just stand on the back of St. Patrick's, and they'd listen, look around. Cardinal Spellman would be relating love and giving and forgiveness to the people, and Christ would be confused, because their route took him through Spanish Harlem. And he would wonder what 40 Puerto Ricans were doing living in one room. This guy had a ring on it, was worth $8,000. And he would wonder at the grandeur. See, why aren't the Puerto Ricans living here? It's clean and nice. What does it all mean? And what? And they'd just be shucking back and forth and talking. And maybe Bishop Sheen would see them back there and run up to Spellman on the lectern and, psst, I want to talk to you for a minute. Well, you go back to the blackboard and stop bugging me now. I'm going to talk to you. I've got a customer in the back. All right, put the choir on for 10 minutes. What is it? What is it? You'll never guess who's here. Who's here? You're not going to believe me. You're going to think I've been drinking. All right, who's here? Christ and Moses. Are you putting me on now? I'm telling you they're here. Are you sure it's them? Well, I've just seen them in pictures, but I'm pretty sure it's them. Moses is a ringer for Charlton Heston, and I'm sure. Where are they standing? In the back. Don't look now, you idiot. They can see us. Christ and Moses, both of you. They're way in the back there. Did Christ bring the family? What's his mother's name? That's weird. I read the book today, too. I'm so nervous. Mary. Mary what? I don't know. Mary Hale? No. Mary Hale. Hail Mary? Harry Mary? No. I don't know what that looks. Oh, yeah. Hail Mary. Oh, Hail Mary full of grace Thompson. They're very thick with the DuPonts. I know. Montauk Point. They're back here. Yes. All right. That's something. If this ever gets around now, it has. Oh, Christ. Don't look in the front door. The lepers are coming. All right. Sir, would you take the bell off, please? Thank you very much. Wait, mister, will you pick up your leg, madam, your nose, your dry? Thank you. They got Sophie Tucker with Moses posing. Take that Hebrew National banner down. Mr. Jess, will you get off the Madonna? That's not a stat. All right, give me a direct line to Rome, quickly. Rome. All right. Hello. John Fran in New York. Listen, a couple of kids dropped in, and, Yeah, you know them. Well, I can't really talk right now. Excuse me. Hello, we're from Newsweek, and we want to know if they have State Department clearance, and is that really them? Yes, it is them. Sonny, get off my hand. Yes, that is them, dear, yes. I don't know if they're going to do any tricks today. I don't know. Yes, they can fly. No, Mary Martin isn't God's mother, and get the hell out of here now. Hello. You know them. One kid is, with a cross of bop. No, not Zorro. Damn, that's right. He brought a very attractive Jewish boy with him. Oh, he got to do something. Well, I know. I can't put him up at your place. No, I didn't paint or anything. Oh, I got a lot of kids staying over here. Look, what are we paying protection for? That's right. Just get him over here. That's all. Yeah. I don't want to hear about that. Look, all I know is that we're up to our and crutches and wheelchairs. Is that good enough for you? The place is ridiculous here. Yeah. They're in the back. Way in the back. Of course they're white. Yeah. Now. Yeah. This is New York. Puerto Ricans stand in the back. That's right. I don't know. Which ones are they, Sheen? The ones that are glowing. Yeah. Jake. When I related to Puerto Rican, I dug like a funny thing of recall. Did you hear the tune up in Spanish Harlem? It's so pretty. I heard a tune. It's a rock and roll tune. For years I've been a jazz buff, you know. Now I got on a rock and roll thing, man. But is it rock? Two guys, Stola, Leap, they did like, yak-a-da-yak, don't talk back. You know those cats? Well, they, I assume, wrote the lyrics to Up in Spanish Harlem, and it is so pretty, man. Take something like Up in Spanish Harlem, there's a rose that's so sweet, it grows up through the concrete, man. Hits on the run. It's like a heavyweight lyric. Really beautiful. And I started thinking that the Puerto Ricans, they'll have their porgy and bess. And to all the sewers that they're going through, they'll have that culture. And from decadence, beauty does come. But I started thinking now, when the Puerto Ricans come into their own, who's next?
The song Lenny was talking about there was There Is a Rose in Spanish Harlem, recorded by Ben E. King, later also by Aretha Franklin, and, as you can hear, the Crusaders. That's the Type 1 version of the Second Coming Secular Division. Christ returns and can't believe how little attention people have paid to everything he preached during his first visit. If time allows, I'd like to read another piece along the same lines, one of the great sketches by Langston Hughes, featuring the character Jess B. Semple. Later, if possible. If not today, soon. Let's go on to the Type 2 version of the Second Coming trope. This type stresses the commotion of Armageddon and the subsequent transformation of the world into something profoundly different. The difficult and painful birth of a new epoch. A great take on this is William Butler Yeats's poem, The Second Coming, written around 1920. It describes the West heading towards yet another world war. That was prescient of him to see this as early as 1920. In the poem, Yeats has a premonition that the horrible Armageddon that heralds in a new third epoch could be at hand. A couple of quick footnotes first. He uses the term spiritus mundi. I think the concept is from Carl Jung. It means roughly the collective unconsciousness. In the first line, Yeats uses the term gyre. G-Y-R-E. This is a three-dimensional spiral, a corkscrew, shaped like an inverted cone. It gets wider and wider as it goes up. He's talking about a warbird, a bird of prey, a falcon, circling wider and wider and higher until he is, literally, out of control. The falcon gets out of control of the falconer. And if you have a better metaphor for the reality of war, please send me an email. Later in the poem, there come references to the Sphinx, heralding the pre-Christian epoch, to the cradle of the baby Jesus, heralding the Christian epoch, and, oh my God, what is coming next, to herald the third epoch. Whatever it is, it's going to be a bumpy flight between airports. Here is Yeats's The Second Coming, which I will read from my marvelously preserved Norton Anthology of English Literature, which I purchased for freshman English class in 1968. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the second coming is at hand. The second coming. Hardly are those words out when a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. Somewhere in the sands of the desert, a shape with a lion body and the head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun, is moving its slow thighs, while all about it real shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again. But now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle. And what rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born. The singer-songwriter called Sting, of the Police, knew his Yeats. We have Sting's own version of the Second Coming theme, Type 2, in his song Synchronicity 2. Here, instead of bloody warfare, Armageddon is the bloody degradation of lower middle class and working class life. And the beast that is slouching towards its own Bethlehem is an aquatic creature, the Loch Ness Monster, or maybe one of Nessie's nephews. Otherwise, it's pretty much the same poem.
Oh,
Okay, we've heard examples of two types of Second Coming tropes. Type 1, Christ returns, looks around, and boy is he miffed. Classic example, Lenny Bruce's famous routine, Christ and Moses. Type 2, all hell breaks loose, civilization crumbles, and a new epoch is born. Classic example, Yeats's poem, The Second Coming, and the Police's not at all bad update of 1983. Let's return to type 1, as we do have time for Langston Hughes's sketch, Simple Praise a Prayer. The narrator, the I, is a college-educated, somewhat naive black man. His companion in the dialogue is Jesse B. Semple, nicknamed Simple. He is unschooled, lower class, and from the South. But in many ways, he is sharper than the narrator. They're both black men, both living in Harlem in the 1940s, right after World War II. So, the narrator is a straight man, and Simple gets all the good lines. Abbott and Costello. The Simple sketches were published in a black newspaper and intended for black readers. A couple of footnotes up front. Simple uses the term Jim Crow. That old term refers to apartheid American style. Segregation, unequal civil rights, blacks in the back of the bus, whites-only water fountains, and the lot. And there's a reference to Mrs. Roosevelt. That would be Eleanor Roosevelt, widow of the late president, and a lifelong supporter of good causes, including civil rights. I'm not going to try to duplicate the sounds of black American speech, so you'll have to use your imagination. And I'm going to have to cut out a few passages here and there, strictly for time considerations. Please buy or borrow the book, The Best of Simple by Langston Hughes, and read the uncut sketches for yourself. Simple Prays a Prayer. It was a hot night. Simple was sitting on his landlady's stoop reading a newspaper by streetlight. When he saw me coming, he threw the paper down. Good evening, I said. Good evening, nothing, he answered. It's too hot to be any good evening. Besides, this paper's full of nothing but atom bombs and bad news, wars and rumors of wars, airplane crashes, murders, fightings, wife whippings, and killings from the Balkans to Brooklyn. Do you know one thing? If I was a praying man, I would pray a prayer for the world right now. What kind of prayer would you pray, friend? I would pray a don't want to have no more wars prayer, and would go like this. Lord, I would say, I would ask him, Lord, kindly please take the blood off my hands and off of my brother's hands and make us shake hands clean and not be afraid. Neither let me nor them have no knives behind our backs, Lord, nor up our sleeves, nor no bombs piled out yonder in a desert. Let's forget about bygones. Too many men's and women's are dead. The fault is mine and theirs too. So teach us all to do right. Lord, please. And to get along together with that atom bomb on this earth, because I do not want it to fall on me, nor thee, nor anybody living. Amen. I didn't know you could pray like that, I said. It ain't much, said Simple, but that girlfriend of mine, Joyce, drugged me to church last Sunday, where the man was preaching and praying about peace, so I don't see why I shouldn't make myself up a prayer too. I figure God will listen to me as well as the next one. You certainly don't have to be a minister to pray, I said, and you have composed a good prayer. But now it's up to you to help God bring it into being, since God is created in your image. I am willing to help him, said Simple, but I do not know much what to do. The folks who run this world are going to run it into the ground in spite of all, throwing people out of work and then saying, peace, it's wonderful. Peace ain't wonderful when folks ain't got no job. Certainly a good job is essential to one's well-being, I said. It is essential to me, said Simple, if I do not want to live off of Joyce. And I do not want to live off of no woman. A woman will take advantage of you if you live off of her. Do you reckon Depression Days is coming back? I don't know, I said. I am not a sociologist. Use colleged, said Simple. Anyway, it looks like every time I get a little start, something happens. I was doing right well pulling down that fine defense check all during the war. Then, all of a sudden, the war had to jump up and end. If you wanted the war to continue just on your account, you are certainly looking at things from a selfish viewpoint. Selfish, said Simple. You may think I am selfish when the fact is I am just hungry if I don't have a job. It looks like in peacetime nobody works as much or gets paid as much as in a war. Is that clear? Clear, but not right, I said. Of course it's not right to be out of work and hungry, said Semple, just like it's not right to want to fight. That's why I prayed my prayer. I prayed for white folks, too, even though a lot of them don't believe in religion. If they did, they couldn't act the way they do. That is what started me to wondering. Wondering what? I asked. Wondering what all these prejudiced white folks would do if Christ did come back. I always thought Christ believed in folks treating people right. He did, I said. Well, if he did, said Simple, what will all these white folks do who believe in Jim Crow? Jesus said, love one another, didn't he? But they don't love me, do they? Some do not, I said. Jesus said, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. But they don't do that way unto me, do they? I suppose not, I said. You know not, said Simple. They Jim Crow me and lynch me any time they want to. Suppose I was to do unto them as they does unto me. Suppose I was to lynch and Jim Crow white folks. Where would I be, huh? In jail. You can bet your boots I would. But these are Christian white folks that does such things to me. At least they call themselves Christians in my home. They got more churches down south than they got up north. They read more Bibles and sing more hymns. I hope when Christ comes back, he comes back down south. My folks need him down there to tell them Ku Kluxers where to head in. But I'll bet you if Christ does come back, not only the South, but all over America, there'd be such another running and jumping and shutting and slamming of white folks' doors in his face as you never saw. And I'll bet the Southerners couldn't get inside their Jim Crow churches fast enough to lock the gates and keep Christ out. Christ said, such as ye do unto the least of these, ye do unto me. And Christ knows what these folks have been doing to old colored me all these years. Of course he knows, I said. When Christ was here on earth, he fought for the poor and the oppressed. But some people called him an agitator. They cursed him and reviled him and sent soldiers to lock him up. They killed him on a cross. At Calvary, said Simple, way back in B.C. I know the Bible, too. My Aunt Lucy read it to me. She read how he drove the money changers out of the temple, and how he changed the loaves and fishes into many and fed the poor, which made the rulers in their high places mad because they didn't want the poor to eat. Well, then, when Christ comes back this time, I hope he comes back mad his own self. I hope he drives the Jim Crowers out of their high places, every living last one of them from Washington to Texas. I hope he smites white folks down. You don't mean all white folks, do you? No, said Simple. I hope he leaves Mrs. Roosevelt alone. And I thank you for listening. New World Notes comes to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. Christ and Moses was recorded at Lenny Bruce's Carnegie Hall concert of February 4, 1961. The opinions expressed here, brilliant and obviously correct as they are, do not necessarily represent the views of this station's management or staff, let alone the licensee. For more on New World Notes, or to send feedback, or for an archive of past shows, please drop by our website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Till we get to my non-carborundum, remember, not well paid, but at least blessed are the peacemakers, and please tune in again next week. Ciao.